Good morning, John.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Okay, thank you very much for joining us this morning. I know you're busy down there. That I was told you might have to run away for a vote or something.
Well, hopefully, if you hear a bell going in the background, John, that means I'll have to go.
Okay.
But all going well, hopefully no bell will ring.
Okay, now, I want to talk about this recent survey that doesn't make for good reading about unemployment. And it says that unemployment in Dublin North West, including Ballymun and Finglas, reached over 23%. That's a huge rate of unemployment.
Absolutely. I mean, look, there's no hiding the figures, John, that, you know, the biggest thing that we are trying to deal with is unemployment. And I suppose when you're armed with the figures and you put it into context, you know, in between 2008 and 2010, a quarter of a million people lost their jobs in this country. So that's about 85,000 jobs a year were lost between 2008 and 2010. And that means it puts the figure of, let's say, national unemployment at around 420,000 or thereabouts. I mean, so that's a really, really tough figure to deal with. And I mean, in fairness, I know gains have been made. About 1,000 jobs a month have been created over the last 15 months. It's a small number, but it's you know, considering, you know, a quarter of a million jobs were lost in the 3 years before that turnaround, it's a sign in the right direction. Honestly, I think, you know, we need to be doing more there around creating jobs, but it's actually a very, very difficult task, John. And obviously areas like Dublin North West, that was mentioned in the survey that you're talking about, has an even higher unemployment rate than other areas in the city. But, you know, I was looking back through the figures when I knew I was going to be coming on air. And even during the boom times, John, Dublin North West had an unemployment rate higher than the city average. So even during the good times, the rate of unemployment in areas like Dublin North West was still even higher. So you would expect it to be higher again than other areas in the downtimes if it was higher in the good times. But that doesn't mean that it's acceptable. That's the first thing.
Oh, and definitely not. No.
You know, without a doubt, and I don't want to get that message across, because, I mean, anybody who wants to work and doesn't have, you know, the opportunity to work isn't acceptable, and there's an onus on the state to do as much as they can to attract industries in and to help businesses who want to start up from the area or from the country to start up and grow in this country. It does an onus on us as a government to do as much as we can. And there is lots happening, but given, you know, when you have that figure of a quarter of a million jobs lost in the 3 years before we became this new government, it's very hard to match that, to kind of bring that figure back. But we are bringing it back. It is slow, but that's not an acceptable answer, and I don't want it to be seen as an acceptable answer. But I mean, there are lots of things that are being done, John. In particular, you know, I mean, I know I spoke on this show before about the youth guarantee.
Yes,
because youth unemployment is a massive problem. It's a huge, huge problem. I mean, we've got about, you know, almost 30% of young people under the age of 25 are out of work. And, you know, we know that there are even worse effects for people under the age of 25 if they're out of work for more than a year. So we have to be particularly mindful of trying to get young people back into work, because the long-term effects are worse than somebody, let's say, who is a little bit older, who loses their job for a while. Like the research shows that, you know, if you're under 25 and you're out of work for a year or more, you will never earn the same as somebody the same age as you who has been working all their life. And, you know, and then there's the knock-on effects of just trying to get back into work. And unfortunately, if we don't deal particularly with young people who are out of work, they run the risk of never being in work again, because, you know, the longer you're away from work, the harder it is to get back. I mean, we're not short on initiatives, John. That's one thing. I mean, we've got the, you know, the youth guarantee, hopefully, which we'll see piloted. Hopefully, we get an announcement later on in June, and we'll see the opportunity of a new way of dealing with youth unemployment in the Ballymun area as a pilot case, whereby everybody under the age of 25 who's out of work for 4 months will be offered the chance of a guarantee that they will, after 4 months of being unemployed, they will either be given a job placement, further education and training relevant to their needs, or an apprenticeship, or else ideally a job if there's a job available. So, I mean, there is hope there around that we are looking at you know, creating this system whereby we'll have a guarantee for anybody under the age of 25 that once you're out of work for 4 months, that you will be guaranteed something, that you will not, you know, have to sit at home and do nothing, that something will be offered to you according to the needs that you have and the abilities that you have. So, I mean, there's that. And, I mean, I can list a whole lot of things that we are trying to do, John, around unemployment. As I said, we're not short on ideas, but what we are short on is money to actually roll out the ideas so that everybody can benefit from them. But, you know, it's a tough one, without a doubt. I mean, let's say, I mean, there are some good in it. Like, I mean, we can't get away from the figure as well that, you know, about 15,000 jobs have been created over the last 15 months. And we've had the likes of Apple creating more jobs. I know Apple's in the papers for other reasons today. PayPal, eBay, and the Kerry Group, which is one of the largest Irish multinationals, has created additional jobs. And just an interesting thing, I was just recently there in China on a trade mission to China, where we met the Chinese president. And one of the interesting facts, Ireland is one of the largest exporters of baby powder milk into China. And we're hoping to grow that. And growing that means more jobs in Ireland, you know. And we have a Kerry, we have a Kerry factory just up there on the Jamestown Road. And, you know, so there are knock-on effects even to the local area if the likes of Kerry begins to be able to expand their market in China. You know, like, milk isn't safe in China, so they're very anxious to import milk from other countries. And Ireland is one of the largest exporters of milk into China, and I didn't know that until I was in China.
No, that's very interesting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's interesting. So, I mean, we there are lots of things happening, but the reality is, and, you know, I suppose that because I'm a TD, I have to remind myself of this every day, we're still in a bailout program where there are terms and conditions attached to the money that we have and the money that we can spend. And until that's finished, we have strict conditions about what we can do, and we have limits around what we can spend, whether it be on, you know, getting people back to work. But one of the main things, John, you know, that we are concerned about in government is getting people back to work. Because anybody, you know, look, I've got some family members who are on 3-day weeks and so on, so I know what it's like for people not to be in work. And, you know, it's our job to get people back into work. And, I mean, another interesting thing there, John, I just recently spoke to the head of the social welfare offices for Dublin North, which would include Ballymun, Finglas, right through as far as Swords. And they run these jobs fairs. They had a jobs fair there recently. And the first thing you saw when you went into their jobs fair was that there were 1,800 jobs available in Dublin City right now. But the problem was that there were some people. But part of our problem is that out of that 250,000 people that I mentioned who have lost their jobs in from the 2008 to the 2010, a lot of those, about nearly 200,000 of those were people from the construction sector. So they were people, you know, who were involved in the trade sector, whether they were brickies, whether they were plumbers, electricians, or labourers. And a lot of the jobs that are even available now, because there are jobs out there, as I said, 1,800 jobs were advertised at that jobs fair, but there were jobs that required skills that some people didn't have.
These would be IT skills, John.
It's not just IT skills. I mean, it'd be skills and languages. Let's say, for example, PayPal. I mean, anybody who's listening in who uses, who buys things online, you know, you can either pay with your credit card, or you can use this safer method, which is PayPal, where they have your account details stored. So PayPal opened up a new call center I think it was just in Dundalk there last year, and they were hoping to create 1,000 jobs. Now about 500 of those still haven't been filled, because the PayPal center in Dundalk will be operating the European market. So if somebody from Germany has a problem with their PayPal account, they're getting through to Dundalk. And there's a shortage of people with the qualified languages to engage with people who PayPal will be dealing with in Europe. So it's not only do we have an unemployment issue, it's when we do have employment available, some people don't have the skills, or not enough people have the skills. So one of the other tasks that we in government are trying to do is to qualify people in the skills that are needed for the jobs that actually are out there that people can't fill. You know, so, I mean, for example, I mentioned the PayPal one. There are other examples like that whereby, and in IT, for example, whereby there are people where companies that have set up in Ireland are having to hire people from abroad for now because there isn't enough people with the qualifications needed to do some of the jobs. So part of our job here at the moment in government is, number one, trying to create jobs. And then number two, for the jobs that are there and new jobs that are coming in, is upskilling people who are out of work. So some people who might be listening in might know that some of their new social welfare offices, let's say Ballymun, the Ballymun office has become one of the new one-stop-shop social welfare offices, whereby it's not just about going down to sign on once a month. It's where you go in, you'll have a one-to-one interview or a group interview around your skills and talents and trying to match up the types of jobs or careers that would best suit your skills and talents. So we've kind of moved from a kind of a social welfare system that just paid out payments to a system that now is trying to address the needs of the individual who comes in. So if I come into the social welfare office and I'm unemployed and it's my first time signing on, you know, they're going to work through a CV with me. They're going to look at, you know, what experience have you had already? What qualifications do you have already? And the problem is with a significant amount of people who are out of work, particularly given the fact that, you know, nearly 190,000 or thereabouts came from the construction sector where there isn't a lot of jobs. You know, there's a lot of upskilling or reskilling needed. And that's why we have things like Springboard, which is a conversion course for people who, let's say, would have come from the construction sector and they can, you know, go back and qualify. You know, it does mean having to, it's paid for, of course, it does mean having to go back and study for between 6 to 18 months to transfer into a new qualification where jobs are available. And there's a very, very good initiative that was announced last year, John, called the Momentum Initiative. And that's only for long-term people, long-term unemployed people, people over a year unemployed. And that's about completely giving people the skills in jobs that are actually out there, but there is nobody to fill. And that's a fairly successful program already. So let's say, for example, there's lots of jobs in what we call the white tech area, which is jobs to do with health, whether it be working right through from a care assistant to other jobs in new nursing homes and things like that around. And the Momentum Initiative is training people in those types of careers in order to take up jobs like that. It's also training people in the IT sector to take up jobs like that, because we do have jobs available, but not enough, clearly, for everybody who's out of work. But we do have jobs available, but not enough people with skills to fill some of them. So we've got two parts. We've got the part of trying to deal with the massive amount of people who are out of work, and then also, you know, trying to identify people who are capable of taking on some of the jobs that are there, but they're not qualified for. So it's no easy task, John. But there is no shortage of ideas or initiatives out there. The problem is funding to extend those initiatives to everybody. But the reality is, I mean, that article that you referred to do with figures, there are black spots around the city, and the black spots around the city where there's higher unemployment tends to be in areas, including my own area in Dublin Northwest. I mean, I'm from Ballymun. And it's typically an area where we have a higher population in the past of people who didn't finish school, may not have gone on to college, whereas there are other areas where people traditionally finish school and traditionally go on to college. So you would expect their unemployment rate to be less, because, you know, the research would always show that during tough times, it's the people with the least qualifications end up being unemployed. So our task is to try and upskill those people so that they are available and able to take up, number one, jobs that are there that we can't get people to fill, and number two, that jobs that will come down the line without a doubt. But, you know, I would be fooling people if I was to turn around and say that every single person out of the 420,000-odd people who are unemployed will have a job in the next year. I mean, what happened to the economy between 2008 and 2010 was just astronomical. I mean, it completely collapsed. And to rebuild that up as quickly as it collapsed is not going to happen. But it is about giving people a hope that you know, a new type of environment is being created, not just based on the construction sector. Because the reality was, we were getting most of our taxes as a country to run the country through the construction sector, through building new homes, new apartments. And that wasn't healthy. That's not a way to kind of, you know, keep your taxes coming in, because there's only so much building that you can do, and clearly that amount of building has happened. And now the building game, for example, the building game in its height was giving in about 35 billion euro a year to the economy. Now it's giving about 8 billion euro. So there's a massive shortfall there, for example. So what we're trying to do is create address the issue of unemployment, particularly youth unemployment, try and upskill people who are long-term unemployed to jobs that actually are there and jobs that will be coming down the road. But, you know, I don't want to give the sense to people who are listening in that this is all talk. This is no easy task, and anybody who thinks it is, you know, is fooling people, and I'm not in the game of fooling people, John.
Okay.
I did a lot of talking there, sorry.
No, you're fine, you're fine. No, you hit on a few points there, especially the economy, and you're not in the you don't want to fool people. I've spoken to you before, and I know about the work you do in the Dublin North West, and you do great stuff. Now, come the next election, you would normally just fly back in. But are you a bit worried about the popularity or the Labour Party? Will you still run under the banner of the Labour Party? You know what I mean?
Well, first of all, hopefully I will still intend on running again. That's the way I feel as of now. I assume I will run again whenever the next election is. But what I will say, John, I mean, number one, it's, I think any party that's actually in government, it's even in the good times, it's probably tough, because you're the party or the parties when you're in government that are making decisions. And when you're in opposition, you can criticise every decision if you wanted to. And you can gauge what public opinion is and try and run with public opinion. And that's sometimes what happens in opposition politics. But the reality is, as somebody says to me one day, when you're in government, you only shoot live bullets. So you've got to be very careful about the decisions you make. And unfortunately, you know, in a time particularly when we're borrowing €1 billion, or just €1.25 billion a month, just to keep the lights on in this country, just to pay for social welfare payments, just to pay for the teachers, to pay for the SNAs, to pay for the nurses, and I can go on and on and on. When you're borrowing money just to pay for the services to keep the country afloat, that means you have to make really, really horrendous decisions. And it's about which decision isn't as bad as the other decision. And that means you become unpopular, John, and I know that without a doubt. I absolutely know that, because you can't please everybody all the time. And it's a tough one. You know, the economy isn't going to turn around with a magic wand. If there was a magic wand available, it would have been used at this stage. And the reality is, it's trying to say to people that, look, our priority in government as a Labour Party is to protect the people who need protecting most. But that doesn't mean everybody can be protected. It's protecting them as much as you can. So, I mean, I genuinely believe, John, like anybody, for example, listening in, who might know somebody or who is receiving a social welfare payment, we've protected the core weekly payment. Now, that's a big ask. I mean, because there are other parties, we have to kind of remember as well, you know, only 1 out of 5 people who went to the ballot box voted for Labour. But if you open the paper today, it's like as if everybody is blaming Labour, even though not everybody voted for Labour, but they're saying, we wanted you in there to protect us, and how are you protecting us? And, you know, given that, you know, 4 out of 5 people didn't vote for us, but they expect, you know, us to save them, you know, maybe if more people had voted for Labour, we'd have more say over what decisions are made. But what we are doing is, we are trying to protect people, particularly who need protecting most. And, you know, the weekly core social welfare payments, you know, somebody who's unemployed still receives €188. That hasn't changed. But it means other things have to change, because if you want to protect that. And if you're in government at a time when, you know, it's the worst case scenario of an economy ever in the Irish state, and you have to make horrible decisions, and you're about trying to say which are the least horrible decisions to make, it means you become unpopular. And, you know, but that doesn't mean you don't try and make those decisions, because it is about trying to create an environment whereby Ireland can have a solid economy, whereby we're out of a bailout programme. Because remember, we inherited a bailout programme from the last government, who told us, I can remember, you know, watching on TV, and one particular minister from the last government being asked outside government buildings, is the Troika in here? And he says, no, they're not.
Yes,
and they
we all remember that.
Do you know? And
they're actually, at this moment in time, they're actually the most popular party in the country, and I cannot understand that.
Well, what it reminds me, I mean, it actually shocks me. It absolutely shocks me to think that people have very, very short memories, and think that the people who got us into this state, that they actually think they're worthwhile having in again. I mean, it actually frustrates me, because, look, I work every hour that God sends in order to try and make things a little bit better. But there is no magic wand, and there are awful decisions to be made. And we can either say that they have to be made, or else pretend that they don't have to be made. But the reality is, if we want to be able to be in control as a country of our own funds, we have to sign up to the margins of what our funders are saying. And that's, there's terms and conditions attached to the money that we spend. And, you know, it's interesting. Actually, can I just say one thing? I was in China last week on a trade mission, and we're speaking to one of the ministers over there, And they have really poor quality water in China. A lot of their seas are polluted. And we were talking about water charges. And they were very surprised to think that, you know, we don't have water charges in Ireland. Even China has water charges. And it was just interesting because you would think, you know, a country like China, they don't. But there are terms and conditions attached to the money that we spend. And the whole idea is that if we can continue to, you know, reduce our spending and increase tax or take taxes from other places than just people working, that in 2 years' time or at the end of next year, we'll be out of the bailout programme, and it'll begin to mean that we'll have complete over how we spend our money. That doesn't mean we'll have more money, but we'll have a more safer, solid economy where hopefully we'll have even more people in work than we have now, more people skilled for new jobs coming up, and those people who are out of work protected through various courses and things like that so that they are getting the skills in order to take up jobs. But let's be honest with everybody, there's no easy task here. And for anybody in the opposition to think that there's an easier way of doing it, you know, they're wrong and they know they're wrong. I mean, you only have to look at one party who's also in government up in Northern Ireland, and they're down here in opposition. What they're doing up in Northern Ireland is very different than what they're saying down here. Yes, they're closing small schools. Yes, they're closing police stations up in the north of Ireland. You know, their social welfare rates are about a third of what ours are. But yes, they criticise everything down here.
Yeah, their social welfare rates, John, are about a third of what ours are, but their services are a lot better than what we have. But listen, John, the clock, unfortunately, is after beating us. We could stay here talking all morning, and maybe we will some other Wednesday.
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt.
But we just go back to this youth Kieran Tease game. Is there any indication of when they're going to make this announcement? I think we spoke earlier, we thought it was going to be before Christmas.
Yes, we did think it was going to be before Christmas, and one of the things you find is when you're involved in politics, particularly from, you know, when you go from national politics to European politics, because this youth guarantee will be funding coming from Europe, and the European Commission, which is one of the bodies of the European Union, is the body that's making the decisions around the countries that have applied for the youth guarantee scheme. And the latest I heard was about 2 weeks ago that the European Commission will make their decision in June about the youth guarantee. But you know, John, at that, I mean, I think we even need to be doing, like, the fact that we're waiting pretty much 8 months now at this stage for an announcement is unacceptable. That means there's 8 months of young people who are out of work, who are missing out on the opportunity of what a youth guarantee can give them, and that's unacceptable, to be honest with you. But unfortunately, I don't have that say, but I do have the right to criticise it, and it's way too long to wait. That's every single day a lost opportunity for a young person who's out of work, a lost opportunity of potential earnings, a lost opportunity of training, a lost opportunity of them feeling dignified and feeling that they have a place in society, and that's unacceptable. But hopefully we'll hear something in June, which will mean we can at least get the ball rolling around a youth guarantee model for Ballymun, which hopefully we'll be able to extend then to other areas. And definitely I'll be asking for it to be extended to as many other areas as soon as possible, because any day wasted where a young person doesn't get a chance to show off their skills and talents and take part in society is unacceptable, in my opinion.
OK. Unfortunately, we've gone over time, but not to worry. we'll definitely talk again, John. It's always a pleasure
talking
to you.
Absolutely, John. I enjoy it each time we're on. It's a good chat.
OK, right. Thank you very much, John Lyons. Thank you.
OK, thanks, John. Bye. All the best. Bye-bye.